Broadcasting worldwide from an undisclosed location high up on the Rocky Mountains, here are your hosts, Chris and Cherie Geo.
Welcome back. It is October 6th, 2013. It is Sunday. We have, of course, our dear friend Max Egan, who's going to be joining us here in about a moment. He's taking another trip to the Amazon. His last trip to the Amazon was rather enlightening with his ayahuasca experiences that he talks about right here on Truth Frequency, right here on this show. You heard it first here. And, of course, we've talked about DMT ayahuasca in the past, but this time, Max is going to do a new film.
Oh, nice.
And DMT and ayahuasca will be making a cameo, but they won't be a big portion of the film. So, let's see what the film is actually about. Max Egan of the Crow House is joining us. Max, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm good, Chris. Thanks for having me on again, brother.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you for coming back on. Definitely always a pleasure to have you. Tell us about your trip to the Amazon.
Well, it's I'm going there to do a new film, as you said. I'm going there for 21 days, and we're going to be basically filming the whole time we're there. This is definitely not going to be a holiday trip. Some of the people that I'm going with will be off exploring the scenery, but I'll just be sort of head down filming most of the time. But the reason I'm doing it in the Amazon is because people can, you know, identify with the Amazon. There's this certain mystique about Peru. And, you know, people want to get involved when it's Peru. I don't know. There's just some magic about the place. And plus, I want to demonstrate what's going on in Peru. I want to demonstrate what's going on with the Amazon. The town that I'm going to, Pucallpa, is where I'll be mainly staying. And Pucallpa is it's a timber town. It's like 26 or 29 sawmills in Pucallpa. So it shows kind of what they're doing to the Amazon there. And I'll be spending a lot of time up in the jungle as well. And like you say, ayahuasca will be a cameo in it. I want to show how the shaman are basically using it to help reconnect people to the earth. That's why there's so many. It's become so popular now. You know, they're trying to give people a crash course in reconnection to the Earth Mother because there's a need for it. But the film will basically be about the Earth, not really about ayahuasca. It's about the Earth. It's a film about the Earth. The working title is Earth Song. I don't know if it will remain that, but that's what it is at the moment. So, and I don't even really know where it's going. I'm just kind of following spirit. I'm just following the calling to go and do this. And it's all kind of worked out. All of the synchronicities have worked out, and it's kind of put me in this position. And so here I am going to do it, and I'll just see how it unfolds.
Well, that is fantastic. And if you don't mind me saying so, a few years back when we first spoke to you, you were having a little difficult time with finances. And now you are traveling around the world making films. So I just want to just illustrate the point that when you're following your dharma, the universe takes care of you. Would you find that to be true?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it isn't that I'm flush. I mean, I don't have a lot of money still, but it's just synchronicity brings it all about. Like, even when I went around the world last year, I left home and I came home with the same amount of money that I left with because everybody else just took care of it. It was just synchronicities. Oh, you're here? Well, why don't you come here? And then we can go there. And other people did it. I never asked them for any gifts or anything, but people just... I just kind of rode the wave and ended up going right around the planet. And so that's kind of the way this is working out as well. It's not actually costing me very much to do all this because of invitations from people and gifts from people and just what's happening to make it happen. That's what I mean. The film wants to happen. When I was over there last year, during ceremony, I actually had this download that I had to come back and make a documentary in the Amazon. And when I said that, we're at the at Tierra Vida retreat, and at this retreat, the electricity only used to come on for probably 2 hours a night. It usually come on about 6 o'clock and then stay until about eight. And this night it hadn't come on, and we just sort of resigned ourselves to the fact that it hadn't come on. It was about half past seven at that stage at night, and the power hadn't come on, and so we just resigned ourselves to the fact. And I just said before we went to bed, I said, by the way, I had a download last night that I have to come back here and make a documentary. And as I said it, the lights came on. And everyone went, oh, my God, wow, what a sign, you know. And then as soon as someone said, what a sign, the outside lights came on. And everyone went, wow, yeah, this something about this documentary really wants to happen. And then I had an experience here a few weeks ago where I'd basically resigned myself to the fact that I had to go and make this documentary. And this is really freaky, Chris, too. Like, I'd really resigned myself to the fact that I had to do it. I'm thinking, I'm going to South America for 3 weeks. It's a waste of time. Like, I need to be doing something else while I'm there. You know, going all the way from Australia to South America and then all the way back. You know, only spending 3 weeks over there, it's a waste. You know, I should be doing something else while I'm there. But then I thought, no, it's about the documentary. It's about making this film. And I totally resigned myself to the fact that I had to do it. So then I walked outside, and I was just standing outside my little cabin here, and I was looking up at the moon, and I saw a figure walking towards me out of the corner of my eye. It was a figure, and it was all in white. As I turned my head to look at him, it was a man, and he was covered in ochre, like an Aboriginal man covered in white ochre. He had a red headband on. He had shoulder-length hair. He was carrying something in his right hand, like a stick or a spear or something. And he was walking towards me, and he reached up with his left hand and he touched me on the face with his left hand. And then he disappeared. He was gone. It was like an apparition, just walked out of the ether and walked up and touched me on the face. And then I walked into the main house to have dinner, and everyone in the main house said, wow, what just happened to you? And I'm like, what? And they said, you look really different. Like, your eyes have got this glow. It's like your eyes are slightly glowing. What just happened, you know? And I told them about this shaman, this apparition that just walked up and touched me on the face. And so that's another sign. And since that happened, all of these things have happened, which have just made this trip to South America happen, all virtually beyond my control. So it's been amazing.
That is beautiful and inspiring to hear as well. And I'm glad you shared that with the audience, because I think a lot of people out there need to hear that and hear other people. Other people responding to the calls of the universe, because it is all about synchronicity. And once you start looking for those synchronistic events, then you start to see the path that the universe is laying before you. But you'll notice, though, that the synchronicity stops working when you're trying to do your own thing. Instead, you have to let go.
It's when you're trying to do it. It's when you're trying. If you just open yourself up to it, then it just unfolds. It always does. And like, I've been quite disconnected in the last few months. You know, I've noticed, I mean, this is how it happens. You get disconnected and you don't notice. It happens in gradual steps. And then suddenly you find that you're not on your path anymore. And you go, how did that happen? I didn't even notice I was stepping off, because it's a gradual thing. But then as soon as you reconnect yourself, all the synchronicities fall back into place, and then your life will just unfold again. And there's been a lot of stress in my life, and you know, this year, 2013, I'll tell you, I'll remember this year for a while. There's been a lot of big things happen in my life in this year, a lot of emotional trauma that's happened this year, which has really affected me in many ways. But I've just managed to reconnect myself again, and as soon as I did, it all unfolded. And it sounds probably very strange to talk about an apparition walking up to me out of the ether and touching me on the face, but you know, I'm not one for hallucinations, and this sort of thing doesn't happen to me a lot. It isn't that I have lots of visitations or anything like that. It was just a really, really remarkable thing, like profound. I've never had anything like this happen to me in my life. I know a lot of the listeners out there will be open to this and understand how these things can happen. I think it is important for people to know about this sort of stuff. I'd like to know what it means. I'd like to know what it means for someone to reach up and put their left hand on your face. I'd like to know what the symbolism is behind it. I'll have to look that up. As someone that I spoke to, actually a woman from Venezuela, said that she has no doubt that I will meet this shaman when I'm in South America. So we'll see what happens.
We've been contemplating about taking a trip down there, and yeah, Hopefully the universe will make that happen for us in the near future. But there is one thing that I'm concerned about from going down there, and maybe you can speak upon this, but it's a substance called devil's breath. Scopolamine is the scientific term behind it. And basically, this is a drug, a mind control drug, that women or sometimes men walking down the street might meet you at a bar or meet you on the street and drug your drink. Or maybe a guy will walk by and blow this stuff in your face, and you become a zombie for the next 24 or 48 hours until the drug wears off. And they use this to rob tourists, and tourists will, without any question and a smile on their face, will start emptying out their bank accounts, giving everything to these people that are looking to rob them, under the state of complete bliss that this devil's breath brings upon the victim. Have you heard about this drug? And if so, what are some of your thoughts on the possibility of something like that? Maybe not necessarily happening to you, but about the fact that it is happening to a lot of people that travel down to that region.
I think you'll find that that's in Colombia and Venezuela and places like that. I don't think you'll find that it's in Peru. I mean, you might find it in places like maybe Iquitos and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. where I'm going, I mean, I know people there, so I'm getting picked up at the airport. I'm getting picked up at Pucallpa. These are all trusted friends of mine. Everywhere I'm going, I've got people there looking out for me. So I don't think it'll be an issue at all for me while I'm down there.
So your best advice would be for people to establish contacts before they go and make sure that there's going to be people that actually live there that are going to be around them to guide them through.
Well, just know where you're going. I mean, what a lot of people are just going there to have these out of it ayahuasca weekends. They're not respecting the plant. They're not respecting the trip. They're not respecting medicine.
Right.
You know, like Western, it's become trendy to want to go and do ayahuasca. People are looking at it like an acid experience or something. And,
right.
They're not respecting the plant. If people are respectful of spirit, then spirit will guide them and will look after them. If they're disrespectful, then they can expect to perhaps have people disrespect them.
Good advice, advice.
And I'll put it in that way. And if your heart is in the right place and you're not disrespecting the medicine and disrespecting the plant, then I think you'll be fine. But it's going to come down to your heart space.
You know what? I'm kind of chuckling a little bit here, Max, because the first time we had you on the broadcast, I asked you about ayahuasca, and you said, no, I would never do anything like that. You can achieve those states through meditation. But then the universe brought it to you, and you experienced it down in the Amazon. And I have to say, I don't think that I could achieve that kind of state under meditation.
No, it's a different thing. It's completely different to what I expected back then. I followed the synchronicities. It led me to it. I've done probably 14 ceremonies now. So, and it'll be interesting to go back and do ceremony back in the Amazon after the ones that I've done here, because I've done quite a number of ceremonies back here in Australia since I've been back. I found that the more ceremonies you do, the clearer you become.
Right.
It's quite remarkable. It really is. And people that I know, well, I know 60-year-old mothers that do these ceremonies, mm-hmm. that have never done any type of hallucinogen, have never even smoked pot, have never done anything like that. But they're doing these ceremonies and they're having profound experiences.
Right.
So, it's not like a drug. It's certainly not like a drug. It's a medicine. It's a spiritual and a physical medicine. The real danger of it at the moment, though, is that people just aren't respecting the plant. And she's never had to support the clientele that she is now supporting.
Mm-hmm.
They're pulling down vast stretches of the Amazon as we speak. Mainly China are buying up huge tracts of the Amazon. They're clear-felling it and planting cacao. And that's terrible. They shouldn't be doing that. But while this is going on, there's all of this ayahuasca tourism that's happening. And frankly, a lot of the people in Peru are getting sick of it as well. But there's a lot of Westerners coming there. They're not respecting the plant. And they're pulling massive amounts of this plant out of the jungle. It's never had to support this many people before.
Right.
It's
right.
just been used by the Shipibo and by the little tribes, the other tribes in the Amazon, and they've just used this plant for hundreds of years, thousands of years. But now there's this huge influx of Western tourists who all want to go there and have this experience, and they're not respecting the experience, they're not respecting the plant, they're not respecting the jungle. And it's it's in danger of becoming extinct if we don't pay attention to this, start planting and start respecting this plant, you know.
Right. And like you were saying earlier, the people that are coming now, especially the younger ones that are just kind of looking for an acid trip, like you said, they are coming up against some really hefty problems, like the young man that died a few, I guess it was a few months ago. He was taking antidepressants and did not tell the shaman that he was taking anything. And because of that, he died. He had an MAOI.
Guys, hold right there. I didn't even realize, but we went into break.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we'll be back in about 10 seconds. Interesting conversation we were having with Max Egan during the break. We were discussing Devil's Breath, and that led to discussions about ayahuasca tourism and so many people going down there as a fashion statement rather than going down there with the discipline and purpose that most ayahuasqueros have when they embark on these journeys. And Max was also bringing up the point that we're destroying the rainforest. I mean, there's no doubt about that. People have been talking about this for decades, but China has actually bought up a big portion of the rainforest. And it makes me wonder if maybe part of the agenda, not on the surface, but part of the hidden agenda, is to remove a lot of these ethnogenic plants that create these experiences so people don't get enlightened in that particular way.
Right. And then when you have kids that go down there, I mean, there was a 19-year-old boy went down there and he was actually taking antidepressants and didn't tell the shaman and ended up dying. And
yes.
Instead of blaming Western medicine and their toxic chemical dumps that they turn these people into, they blamed the ayahuasqueros. They blamed the ayahuasca.
That's very true, but it happens in every situation. When something like this comes mainstream, then they have to take these poster children and parade them all over the place and say, look how dangerous this stuff is.
Right.
As opposed to drugs like crocodile, which we hear a little bit about, but not too much. But crocodile is something that will not only kill you, but it will start to eat your flesh away and you'll start to develop holes all the way down to the bone in the process of using this. And just like I talked about yesterday, I spent an hour talking about this. The war on drugs has bred K2, crocodile, bath salts, and all these other quote-unquote legal alternatives, while the plants themselves are being outlawed. And that goes for DMT-containing plants that are coming across the border. Again, as I talked about yesterday, the DEA is raiding all of these people bringing it across the border, even though they're not illegal. They're not illegal. But they're still raiding them, taking away all their computers, taking away all their finances, freezing their bank accounts, and preventing people from trading these plants.
While at the same time demonizing the use of these plants in a medicinal sense in the media.
Well, of course.
It's so sinister.
It threatens their pharmaceutical industry. I mean, just imagine, you have a plant that if you take it, you can quit smoking, you can quit heroin, you can quit all of this stuff. That Mitch Schultz documented in DMT, the Spirit Molecule, talked about the healing properties of ayahuasca. They don't want that because it comes from the earth. It doesn't come from the priests in white coats. Max Egan, any thoughts?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And if you look at Big Pharma, I mean, modern medicine is now the second leading cause of death in the Western world. You know,
right?
So, and they're gonna complain about these plants. But you're right about how a lot of this being by design, you know, promote the ayahuasca tourism, get it all in there, get them pulling massive amounts of this stuff out while you're ripping down the jungle, and you're going to finally get rid of this plant. This will become an endangered species soon if people don't start planting. People think, oh, you know, the Amazon is big, it's huge, it's always going to be there. You know, well, they're pulling down vast, vast sections of the Amazon every single day. We'll end up with national parks through the Amazon. There'll be certain sections that people you know, can't go to. I'm actually going to try to buy some. This is something I want to do with the Full Circle Project, is I want to raise the capital to start buying up sections of Amazon jungle. I'm going to create a foundation called the In La Cache Foundation, and I want to start buying up vast sections of Amazon jungle and holding them within the foundation. And this foundation will be for the people, you know, in La Cache. And like, there's a section there now I can buy. I could, if I can raise some money to do it. It's 13,500 hectares of Amazon jungle, pristine Amazon jungle, no roads into it or anything. $55,000, you know, $55,000 for 13,500 hectares of Amazon.
Wow.
That's pretty cheap, you know. So I want to be able to raise the money, and I know where there's lots of sections like this. I've got a friend who's been over there for the last 11 months. She's got all the zoning. She knows people in government who've given her all the zoning plans everywhere, so we know which sections we can buy, and we know how much they are, and we're going to try to buy them all. That's what I want to do with the Full Circle Project, one of the things I want to try to do with the Full Circle Project. And that way people that are involved in the project can go there. We can go there. We can start maintaining this place. The only thing we'd have to do if we can buy vast sections is employ people for border controls to keep poachers out, you know?
Right.
You're absolutely right. That sounds like a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to raise, what, $200,000 for the homeless guy that turned in the money that he found?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure if we put this cause out there, people will contribute. We'll be right back. Back speaking with Max Egan, who always brings some very interesting solutions to the table. And that's what I really like about his way of thinking, is he's always solution-oriented. And What a better cause and a better way to save the rainforest. 13,000-plus acres for $55,000.
That's a good deal.
It really
is. It's a much better solution to the problem than planning on genetically engineering extinct or almost extinct species.
Or throwing yourself in front of a bulldozer.
Right. I know, exactly. Or trying to hijack ships like the Greenpeace activists. These solutions don't make any sense, but yours do, Max. What do you think about the idea that, hey, we can just save all the animals by genetically engineering them?
Oh, yeah, great idea. Yeah, great idea.
They don't have a place to live,
It's like George Carlin said, why don't we just stop meddling in nature? That's what got us to all these problems in the first place, was we keep meddling in everything. You know, just leave it alone. Just let nature be. It's all good. And that's not 13,000 plus acres. That's 13,500 hectares, which is like at least much, much, much more than acres. I can't remember how many acres in a hectare, but it's like 2-point-something acres in a hectare or more.
Right. Oh, wow.
Right.
Wow.
So these are big, vast tracts of land. And that's the thing, you know, the problem that's happening in the Amazon is it's being bought up by foreign companies that are clear felling the whole place.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll buy it. We'll buy it and we'll hold it for the people. We'll put it into a foundation, put it into a trust where it can't be touched. That's what I want to do with the Inla Kesh Foundation, put it all into this foundation. I don't want to own it. I want it to be there in Inla Kesh for everybody. And that's what this foundation will be based on. This will be like a not-for-profit foundation that's there for the people. That's what I want it to be. And I want to use the Full Circle Project to support it. And I want to, the Full Circle Project, you know, I want to bring us back full circle to where we should be. And with this project, I want to be doing things like buying up sections of Amazon and creating workshops and even creating political parties. It's whatever. Anything we can do to undermine this system, anything we can think of to rock the boat in a nice, peaceful and empowered way, I want to do it. Any question that we can put to authority, I want to do it. Anything that we can do to undermine this system, we have to do it. We need to have a platform whereby the whole world can start doing this. If I can create this Inla Kesh Foundation, we can get funding for it, and we can use this funding to fund, you know, objectives and fund initiatives in different states and different countries and different places around the world. Just get it happening. Use the system they've got against them and turn it into something else. And I don't know what we need, but we certainly don't need this, and we certainly cannot allow this system to just go on in the direction it's going, because it's going to destroy this planet. It's going to enslave mankind. And I'm simply not going to allow that, not on my watch, not on your watch. We've got to find an effective method to get back at this system. And it needs to be a movement that is not a movement. It's just an idea whose time has come. There are no leaders. Everybody's a leader in this movement. We need to be like a horde of termites gnawing our way through the fabric of this system so that there's nobody they can stomp on because it's all of us doing it. You know, we've all had enough. And if we can create some sort of a platform that can provide us with the funding we need to do this, then that we can do it. And that's what I want to do with this In Lakesh Foundation and with the Full Circle Project. And I think it's really important that we put money into buying up tracts of the Amazon because it's the only way we're going to save it. And if we lose the Amazon, we lose the fight. If we lose the Amazon, then we don't deserve this planet. Honestly, we don't.
You know what? You just shed a lot of light on the Save the Rainforest Foundations because you're absolutely right. Buying up the rainforest, that is the best way to save it. But these Save the Rainforest Foundations are funneling millions of dollars through them a year, and they're not doing that.
Right.
So it just goes to show that even their system or their formula is a failing formula. And they're not there to actually do that. They're just there to take people's money.
Well, and yeah, the UN conservation efforts seem more like an anti-human kind of thing than anything else.
No, we don't want any of that. We don't want any of that. No. Well, so, yeah, I reckon we buy it ourselves. You know, we all get involved. You know, if we can all get involved in something that's going to work, something that's going to empower the individuals within our community so that we can all stand together because... You know, that's the one thing they fear is unity. And they get away with what they're doing. They just write all this stuff down on paper and we go along with it. You know, I think this could be an idea that hopefully unites people. And that's what I want to do with the Full Circle Project. I've had a lot of good response from people since I mentioned that it is going to get off the ground. And that's what I want to use this film for. I want to use it to launch this project. And it's got to be something, because there's all these movements, that, you know, movements that get co-opted and lead you down blind alleys and try to be a new nanny state for you. We don't need any of that. We don't need any of that. We need to individually take our power back. And that's what I want to do with this project and just get as many people on board as possible.
You said something that really resonates with me, and that was use the system against them. And I totally agree. And if you ever look at Mark Stevens' work or Nathan Frazier or anybody that's into law, that's basically what we're doing is using the system against them. And on that note, I want to share a little story, interesting story with the audience briefly. Back in 2009, I was pulled over and given a ticket for driving while license invalid. My license was not actually invalid at the time. It was a DPS computer error. So I called DPS to find out exactly what happened. And I sent the letter over to the court and I said, look, here's my driving record. There's not a suspension showing here. I spoke to DPS. They said it was a computer error. Dismissed this ticket. They refused. They said that wasn't sufficient evidence because it didn't prove that my license was valid at the time. It just proves that there was no suspension on there at the time, which it was ridiculous. It was a ridiculous thing. So I just told them to F off because there was nothing that I could do to fix the situation. They found me guilty and that's that. And then there was almost $1,000 in surcharges that I had to pay over the next several years as a result of this. Well, I didn't pay a single one. I didn't pay anything. And I just told them to F off. And for the past 3 years, I've been driving around without a driver's license. And I've been going back and forth with these people. And you know what? I'm a free man. If I want to drive, I'm going to drive. It doesn't matter if I have a license to do so or not. But anyways, the judge resigns. A new judge comes in. I called DPS up and I said, look, I need a written copy. I need a letter, a written statement saying that my license was valid at the time. This is a 3-year-old ticket. 3 years. It's almost impossible to do what I was able to accomplish. I call Mark Stevens up and I said, hey, Mark, you know, I've got the situation I've been dealing with for the past 3 years. He goes, oh, man, it's going to be tough. Try sending them a petition for a mandamus. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's MANDAMUS. And basically, this is an order to the presiding judge to do what is lawful. So I got a statement from DPS saying that my license was valid at the time. I sent in an order to the court, and it went through everything. I mean, there was no valid contract, no meeting of the minds. The license was valid at the time. I was railroaded by the prosecution. I was railroaded by the previous judge, on and on and on. They finally overturned it after 3 years. And that's another example, using the system against them. And so for the first time in 3 years, I'm driving legally, and Cherie doesn't have to have a heart attack every time I go out thinking that I might get arrested for driving without a license. But it just goes to show, you can use the system against them.
Well, yeah, you can, and that's what we need to do, like question authority on every single level and get it to the point where the wheels fall off the system. It's like, to me, the system's fiction. I don't think it's real at all. I mean, it only exists on paper, and we don't need it. We don't need a system. We don't need government. We don't need any of the stuff that they tell us we need. But while it's there, question it. Question it at every single turn and use it against it in every possible way that you can. Use the system against itself until the system itself collapses, because that's the way to do it. You know, every single way we can rock the boat, that's what we have to do. The people of this planet have got to stand up and they've got to start questioning these people who believe they control them, because they don't control you. You know, it's just that we've been taught to believe what's on the paper, but it's not real, it's fiction. They just write it all down, they make it up, and they get these terrorists in blue uniform to come and enforce it upon you. But, you know, we can stand up against this if we stand together. And that's what I want to do with this project. You know, we've got to empower the people. And too many movements come along, and people enjoy them, you know, that they'll embrace this movement, but they won't ever take the power themselves. They think the movement's going to save them. Whether it's the Zeitgeist movement, whether it's the OPPT, whether it's the Venus Project, whether it's whatever, it's a new nanny state. What's going to empower you as an individual to stand up enough that you will respect yourself enough to respect the neighbors around you so you can all stand together? Because that's what it's all about. You know, you've got to have realize that there's no one that's going to lead you back to freedom. You have to lead yourself. And you're only going to do that if people will stand with you, not behind you, but with you. And that's only going to happen if you respect them. And you're only going to do that if you respect yourself. This is what I keep telling people. I've been telling people this for 6 years. There's your solution right there. Just respect yourself. Know yourself enough to respect yourself, because when you do, all the stuff you have with other people breaks down. Now, but this system's designed to keep perpetuating that. I mean, I do it. I get sucked into it. I argue with people. I get annoyed. I get, especially online. I get annoyed with people online. I don't have much stress in my life around me, but online, it's a weird thing.
Oh, right? Max,
you can't read the emotions in the words.
You don't like the YouTube words, comments? You don't like the YouTube comments? Those are the best comments in the world. The people on YouTube are the most enlightened and friendly people I've ever seen in my life.
But the thing is, though, when you read comments, you don't hear the way it's said. And the words can seem brutal, but sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're being said in a normal way. I mean, I've written comments that if you read them, you probably think that sounds very harsh. But if you put my voice to it and hear me speaking in the calm manner that I usually speak, it sounds quite normal. It just sounds a little bit cynical or perhaps sarcastic, because that's my humor and that's the way I treat things. I'm usually a little bit cynical or sarcastic. I mean, I'm a Scorpio as well. I can lash out. I've definitely got a sting, and I do not deny that. But online, it's very easy to get sucked into arguments with people and get sucked into those energies, because you can't read the emotion in the text. There's no emotion in text. I think this is why they like texting so much on phones and stuff, and why this has all been promoted so much, because it removes the emotional connection between people. It removes the emotional contact, you know. I mean, text and digital is good, but it's missing the eyebrows.
Mm-hmm. It is. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back. Final segment of the hour on the other side, but we're going to keep up Max for the third hour of the broadcast as well, so be sure to stick around. We'll be right back.
Els canals en el peu de Santanya pareix que sent picarols suaus i es mou sa manada.
And we're back, speaking with Max Egan, final segment of the hour. And Max, in this short segment that we have, tell people a little bit about the Crow House, where they can tune into your program and your past films, along with what's coming up for you.
Well, my website is thecrowhouse.com, and you can find pretty well everything that I've done there. There's a massive radio archive there of all the shows that I've done. There's the 6 films that I've made. I do a radio show on the American Voice Radio, which goes to air at 10 p.m. Friday night Pacific time. And I'll probably be moving over to Dave Icke's new TV station in November, if I can get it together to provide him with enough shows to last the end of the year, because I've got to take off in November as well. So that's kind of difficult at the moment. I need to provide David with some television shows so that he can have me on for the launch, or if I'm not there for the launch, I'll probably start early next year on Dave Icke's TV station. I'm not sure. But there's a chance I might even be going to England to do that, because he's got the whole studio set up there. And it's looking really big. I was speaking to Ken O'Keefe, actually, just before I came onto the show today, and he's just gone and seen David yesterday, and he's had a look at the studio, and he said it looks really, really promising, and he has no doubt that this is going to be huge, what Dave Icke's doing. You know, it is going to be a great television studio that he's putting together, and it'll be you'll be able to tune in on your TV and watch this in England. So it's got a lot of potential. If they can get the funding to keep it happening, it could make a huge difference. And like I said, we've got to start taking this system on in every single possible way. So that's my plans for the future. The gloves have really come off. All the stuff that I've been through, all the emotional stress that I've been through in the last year, it's really prepared me for where I am now. It's really made me quite strong. And I'm going to really start going head-to-head with this system over the next 12 months as much as I can, get as many people on board in as many countries around the world as possible, and really start making some waves in every single way that we can. And this is why I've asked people for input. Any ideas that you've got, ways that you can empower your community, ways you can build networks in your community. If you haven't got a network in your community, well, maybe you'd like to build one. Maybe we can help you with that. You know, we can start creating some sort of a database that people can access so they can find people in their local area. I mean, all sorts of things. There's a massive amount of possibilities we can do with this, but we've got to find a way of uniting the people in a common cause with which there is no leaders, where everybody's a leader, everybody's empowered. You know, it's a big ask, but that's what we have to do. We can't just sit back and let this system roll on the way it's going, and we can't expect to change it really by using its legal parameters, because it creates those legal parameters to protect itself, not to give us remedy. We can go in there and we can question these legal parameters, and we can wind them up and do what you did. We can use that system against them as much as we can, but eventually we need to step above it and realize that it's all fiction. But to be able to convince people of that, and to get a massive amount of the population to realize that, will take a little bit of effort. But I think we can do it. You know, if we rock the boat in as many ways as possible, I think we will win. But now's the time we have to do it.
What are your thoughts really quick on, I know you're down in Australia, but on the American Obamacare fiasco that's going on right now?
Oh, it's a joke. It's a joke. I mean, there's other ways of doing things. A lot of it's just fear porn. But I think, you know, as well, I mean, a lot of the people in government, they see how bad this is actually going to be for the United States, and they're doing what they can to rock the boat. So, you know.
Absolutely. When is your next show?
My next show will be Friday night, Pacific.
Friday night, 10 o'clock. What's coming up? Can you give us a little preview?
No, I never know until I start doing it. I'll just start talking and see what comes out.
I'm the same way. I just open my mouth and let the universe speak for me. And ladies and gentlemen, we've got another jam-packed hour. If you want to head over to truthfrequencyradio.com, and the segments are commercial-free as well, so we can really get deep into the conversation there. Everybody on GCN, we love you guys. We'll see you every Saturday and Sunday right here on the Genesis Communications Network. Kiss the one you love right now, because you never know when the last time is going to be. Special thanks to the board op for writing everything for us this evening. Love you guys.
Love you guys. See you next week.
My faith in destiny is all I need to prevail.
This is the Truth Frequency Radio Network.
I suppose the best way to understand it is to recognize that most of us are constantly thinking and stuck in the mind, but that's not the only way that we can experience consciousness.
If you do proper work, you will go directly into hyperspace.
Which enable us to convey the understanding of the higher consciousness.
But our brains don't operate at this level.
This is something that goes back, you know, as far as you care to look. The left brain has no point of reference.
The vibration of the patterns of the natural environment we have on the planet is completely reflective of who and what we have been.
Because we were designed, of course, to function as a unit.
It's huge because you chose to come here.
It's all in timing. It looks like right now it's time.
Broadcasting worldwide from an undisclosed location high up on the Rocky Mountains, this is Truth Frequency Radio. And now, here are your hosts, Chris and Sharif Gia.
All right, we are back in this third hour speaking with Max Egan. We can pretty much take this broadcast anywhere we'd like. I think we should talk about Mother Earth. What is Mother Earth? What is the spirit of Gaia? Max Egan is embarking on a quest to the Amazon to document that very idea. And so, Max, what is the spirit of Gaia? I mean, we understand, of course. Most of our listeners understand, but I get the feeling that there might be a few out there that don't quite grasp it, especially the ones coming over from GCN, because they're used to the patriotic kind of, you know, patriot radio, but these higher consciousness ideas are not familiar to them. So please take us away.
Well, you know, like the Earth, people have to get over the hump of the Earth being a dead organism. It's not. It's a living conscious entity. And people have a real, real difficulty comprehending that. People think, oh, that's ridiculous. It's just rocks and minerals and rah, rah, rah. You know, they can't think outside an anthropomorphic view. A lot of people don't even believe animals have any real consciousness, you know, any real soul or anything like that. They're just animals. They're just lower life forms, you know. But really, I think all is consciousness, and the Earth included is consciousness. Here we have a dog here that plays with swallows. These swallows come out of the nest. They've got these little babies, and they come out and they swoop on the dog, and he tries to catch them. He's just out there with his jaw snapping all day trying to catch these swallows as they swoop on him. He'll never ever catch one. And they know they won't. They know he will never catch one. We've got four dogs that frequent the yard, but there's only one that tries to catch the swallows when they fly past, and he is the only one that they swoop on because they enjoy the game. It's a game. They have a relationship together. He hides behind the pot plants, and he tries to catch them as they fly past. He knows he never will. He wouldn't even know what to do with one if he caught it. He's a lovely, lovely dog. But he's the only one they play with, you know. So there's a relationship. They're conscious. They know what they're doing. They're playing together. This is interspecies relationship that's happening, a game of cat and mouse that they both enjoy. So it all has consciousness. Everything has consciousness, and the Earth has consciousness. Space has consciousness. Now, the energy, that the fabric of reality itself is conscious. That's the thing. You know, we've done tests to show that you're consciousness is not local to your body. You literally download it into your body. Your body is just a biological computer tuned to a certain frequency that downloads one frequency from the surrounding field. So it's the energy that creates creation itself, which is conscious. So when you can comprehend that, then of course the Earth is conscious, because the Earth is made up of different frequencies of light and sound like everything else. That's all matter is, different frequencies of light and sound that have slowed to a, you know, slowed down their vibration to become physical mass. That's all it is. So of course it's conscious, because everything is conscious. Yeah, and we're connected to that. And we've lost that connection, and we've been divided, we've been wrapped up in this nationalistic, patriotic view of the world, where we believe that, you know, to be a good person means I have to be patriotic to my country. But all you're really doing by doing that is you're supporting this corporate system. You could love your country, but love the landmass, love the earth itself, love the people that live there, not the name, the United States of America. That's just a corporation, that's just words on a piece of paper. The border is just a thing that somebody wrote on a map. It doesn't mean anything. What exists is the earth and the living life upon the earth. And we're all part of that, and we've forgotten that. We've been given all this nationalistic, patriotic view of the world. You know, and I say that, and people say, oh, he's into open borders. You know, they just don't get it. They just don't get it, you know. It's not about borders at all. It's about life, and we have to get back to that. It's a hard one for a lot of people, though. It's just a difficult way for people to think, because they're trained to think in this patriotic manner. You know, it's all about what's happening in my country. Well, it is to a certain degree, because, you know, you're the only one who can do something about what's happening in your country. But once we do something about that, what are we left with then? What do we do from that point? You know, that's what we have to think about. Do we want a divided world, or do we want a world where people just respect each other? I mean, I'd like to be free to just travel anywhere I want to go. I don't like the idea of having passports and being stamped everywhere and being treated like a product. I mean, I just don't like this, you know. It doesn't make sense to me.
Very well said. And on that note, I have several ideas to add to this and also get your opinion on. First and foremost, I wanted to ask this earlier, but this is the perfect time to ask this. What are your thoughts on cloning animals? Do they have a soul if they're cloned? And let's take it a step further and also philosophize and theorize about the idea of human beings who are cloned. Do they have a soul?
Look, I think everything has a soul. I really do. I think in order to have a, you know, I think the whole concept of what a soul is, you know, I mean, your consciousness, I mean, you are infinite consciousness, like Dave says, like Dave Icke says. And that's true. That's what everything is. So if it's animated, it must have a soul, you know. And with what I've seen in animals, you look at the eyes of these creatures. Look at the love they have for each other. Look at the love two elephants have for each other. Look at the love. Look at these two dogs here that when they see each other, they just, you know, they love each other, these two dogs. They absolutely love each other. The other dogs don't carry on like this. But when these two see each other, these are two souls that know each other. If you saw the way these two dogs react when they see each other, they're jumping up, they're rearing up, and they're rubbing their heads against each other and hugging each other.
Sometimes they sniff each other's butts,
then
too.
Then they just start running. They just start running and doing laps around the property. Right? None of the other dogs do this, but these two particular dogs just react this way. Of course they have a soul. They know each other. They recognize each other. You know? So I think anything animated has a soul. I mean, I don't agree with cloning. I don't agree with cloning anything. I think, you know, we should stop messing with nature. We should let nature do what nature wants to do. I think it's all part of the grand experiment of creation, you know, the grand experiment of consciousness. And I think that we tend to believe that we're the top of the evolutionary food chain. We're the top of the universal food chain. This whole redeemer complex, this whole religious concept that we've, you know, God created man, and man is the pinnacle of God's creation. You know, it's gone to our heads. This egotistical version of who and what we are. We think we're better than everything else in the entire universe, to the point where we've got people like Ray Kurzweil wanting to go and infect the universe with nanotechnology to improve our intelligence. Because whatever's out there must be there to serve us, because we're the top of the universal food chain. This is pure ego. You know, and it's disconnected us from everything around us. It's disconnected us from all the life around us, because we view ourselves as being separate from that life. But we're not. We're connected to the whole thing. We're all in this together. And, you know, this whole world that we've got is basically a product of our imagination. You know, we made all this happen. We imagined the world to be like this, and this is what we created. And we could imagine something very, very different. There's got to be something based on respect. I mean, there's a way out of this. I'm not sure what it is, but I know that it's got to come from respect. It's got to come from people waking up to themselves and realizing this system's fiction and replacing it with something transparent and leading us back to a point where we realize we really don't need a system at all. That's what I'd like to see.
Have you seen the movie The Island?
The Island. Rings a bell. What's it about?
It's about an underground bunker that a scientist...
Produces clones for people.
Right, right. I actually showed it to Chris for the first time a couple days ago, and we had the thought, would a clone have a soul?
Yeah, well, I think it would. I think it would have to. If it's animated, it would have to. If you've got a clone that's tuned to the frequency of Chris Geo or the frequency of Cherie, if they took your DNA and they created a clone of you, if it was alive and animated, then it would have to download that same frequency into you, into itself. It would be essentially you. It wouldn't have your knowledge, but it would just be plucking that frequency into that completely fresh computer. And this is a completely fresh computer. The RAM's completely free. It's got no cache. It's got nothing on the hard drive. No programs are installed. So it's going to grow up, you know, without the knowledge that you have. And it could grow up to be just like you, depending on the programs that are installed in the computer along the way, or it could grow up to be quite different to you, depending on the programs that are installed along the way. But it'd have to have the same soul as you. It'd have to have that experience as you, but maybe the soul is a universal soul. Maybe we are all part of the same soul. Maybe all life is part of the same soul. Maybe all life is simply just a thought in the mind of God, whatever you perceive that to be. You know, it's just... depends on your perspective, you know, but I think if it's animated and if it's experiencing life, if it has emotion and it has memory and it has interaction with other species, like I was talking about with the dog and the sparrow, you know, with the way these two dogs react to each other, there has to be a soul. There has to be something there that creates that recognition, you know. So, yeah, I think so. I think it would have to.
Well, let's take it a step further. Human beings. Oh, now let me touch upon this topic. There was an experiment. Well, no. I'll get to that one here in a minute. Okay. Human beings, when they're put under anesthesia, they have complete darkness, complete blackness. There's no dream state. And I would imagine that during death, you would at least have the dream state, ayahuasca experience. The Tibetan Book of the Dead also describes an ayahuasca experience basically, as the transition between this life and the next life. However, under anesthesia, there's total darkness. What do you theorize happens to the soul when you're under anesthesia? I mean, this is something that's so powerful that the soul ceases to function, at least perceivably, to the person being put under.
Well, that's an interesting thing. I mean, would the soul not return to a universal consciousness to deliver its information, what it's brought along the way? So there's talk in Egyptian a writing of a lady called Elizabeth Hyatt, who believed she was an Egyptian priestess years ago. There's a book called, I think it's called Initiation. And she speaks that in her time between lives, there was just darkness. It was just black. There was nothing. And this would last sometimes thousands of years. And until the right vehicle came for your frequency to experience reality again, and you would be spending that time in contemplation, and there was nothing, absolutely nothing. Recently, my sister, bless her soul, she had five heart attacks in one day.
Oh my
five
God.
Cardiac arrests in one day. She's still alive.
Good.
Very strong,
good.
Very strong woman. But her heart stopped five times and she's now got a pacemaker. She said that in those times she just thought, I think I'm going to faint. And then she'd wake up on the floor. And they must have got a little bit longer each time because another time she was in the car, she had five in one day, and she said, like, the fourth one, she was in the car, and suddenly it was black, and there was nothing, absolutely nothing. And she was looking around trying to find her memory, but she couldn't find it. She couldn't find anything to remember. She couldn't find any information about herself. And she panicked a little bit, and then she found it. She found that information, and then she realized, oh, it's just happened again. I've just had another stroke. I've just had another heart attack, you know. So when her heart stopped beating, she said she was in complete blackness. She said there was no lights. There was no leading down a corridor. There was no meeting people. There was none of this. There was just complete blackness, and there was absolutely nothing in there. There was no memory of who she was. There was no memory of life. There was no memory of anything. She was just searching through the blackness for some information about herself.
Wow.
And so that's an interesting thing, and that was from my sister.
On my most intense DMT trips, I've experienced the same thing. I've gone into a state of blackness before where I cannot remember anything or pull any information out about who I am or my identity at all. I mean, total ego loss. The only thing that I try to hold on to is the thought of Cherie. For some reason, that keeps me grounded and keeps me focused on who I am. And that's what I want to do when I go, is be able to hold on to that one thought to maintain the consciousness. And in an effort to move on to the next plane of existence without getting sucked back into this plane of existence through reincarnation. I think that's key, is being able to remember in that most disconnected state imaginable.
Well, yeah, maybe, or maybe that's not what it's about. Maybe it's about what you do with the time here. You know, see, a lot of our focus is always on obtaining this state of, you know, perfection, you know, whatever, spiritual perfection, enlightenment, so we can move on to this next level that we perceive exists. But everybody that you speak to that goes there or has one of these near-death experiences, eventually they end up in a place where there's void. It's just void. There is no information. So, and then you hear from people like Elizabeth Hyatt, you say you wait in that space because in that moment you are just that frequency of consciousness, but there is nowhere for you to be except in the ether between physical existence. Because when you are in that energetic state, you are in the void. That's what the vacuum is. It's void. It's vacuum. It's just energy. You are simply part of that energy, but because you're it's conscious energy, and you're simply one frequency of it, you're completely alone in that space. You're connected to all it is, but you're completely alone because you're that unique frequency, and if your consciousness is going to remain conscious, then it has to be alone, and it has to be in void. If you think about that, it makes sense. So what about if a lot of this stuff that is teaching us that we have to obtain this certain state and ignore all this darkness and ignore all this stuff that's going on around us so we reach this state of enlightenment so we can go to this place. What if all that's a red herring to prevent people from paying attention to what's going on now? And what if it's about what you do with the time in the physical that you're given? Why are you here? Why are we here doing this? Perhaps we're here to leave a legacy behind so that the next time we come, we have improved this reality for consciousness to be able to experience itself to its fullest potential. That's what this creation was supposed to be about, but somehow this parasitic energy got hold of it, and it is now using this reality to control consciousness and to lead it down a path of self-destruction where it's not getting to experience itself. You know, I think that we're too often concerned about what comes after, and we don't pay attention to the fact that we exist in a physical reality, and we should pay attention to it. You know, I think that's a big part of it, Chris. I really, really do. I think that, you know, my purpose in life, I really believe my purpose in life, for all of my shortcomings and all the mistakes that I made when I was younger, I mean, my life was like a train wreck when I was younger. But for all of that stuff, I learned along the way that it's actually about the legacy. It's about what you leave behind. It's about what you do with the time here. And I want to create a world while I'm here that I know will lead back to a path where human consciousness can experience itself to its fullest potential, because I would like to be reincarnated back into that world next time I come. so I can continue to improve this reality. You know what I'm saying?
Very well said, and I think you're spot on, but I would say that it is a balance between the two. But once you start walking the path of one and doing what, living up to your full potential here in this realm, then ultimately you are also living up to the full potential in the higher realms, and you will experience your full potential once you leave this state as well.
Yeah, yeah, I think. I mean, but I think that, you know, it's about the universal consciousness, really. You know, it's about the information you can get for that universal RAM drive, you know, and when you think about it as well, in the physical RAM drive, when you die, the waters of your body return to the waters of the earth. They replenish that, and it's like a RAM drive, you know, water has memory. So it all works together, you know, but I can see how you would be in a higher realm, or you could reach higher realms, but I think no matter what realm you reach, to experience, to really experience creation, you need to be in the physical, I think, because otherwise it's just etheric. There is no... how do you experience physical sensation? You may experience bliss, emotional bliss. You may experience unlimited love. You may experience unlimited connection. But physical sensation, the experience of having a hot shower, the experience of diving into a beautiful, cool river, the experience of riding a wave, you know, of flying, of parachuting, of just of touching somebody, of kissing somebody. These experiences, these are what, you know, there's a lot to these experiences, and we take a lot of this for granted. It's all about reaching this level that we want to reach, that we hope to reach when we die, but we're not paying attention to the fact that we're alive. That's what I'm finding with a lot of people. They're just not paying attention to the fact that they're alive, and a lot of it is about this. You've got to ask, why are you alive? Are you alive just to improve your consciousness for what happens after, or are you also here to affect this physical reality? Because this physical reality, we're creating this. This is a product of our imagination. Everything that we've done here is because of our imagination. We've imagined reality to be this way, and this is what we've got. And it's a bit of a mess at the moment, you know. I think we should imagine something different. But, you know, I just think a lot of people lose it. They don't pay attention. They place too much focus on what comes after. Because ultimately, we don't know. We don't know. Anybody tells you they do know, well, they might have an idea. Maybe they had an experience that they believed was real, and they told you about it, and suddenly everybody believes it's real, and maybe it is and maybe it isn't. We don't know. We haven't been there. We can't see the future. We just don't know. And when you listen to people who have had near-death experiences, you know, they may have gone through positions where they've seen the tunnel and they've seen the light and all this sort of stuff, but ultimately it usually ends up in a space of void. There's even there's a book called The Case for Reincarnation by someone Fisher, Michael Fisher, Robert Fisher, someone Fisher, Joe Fisher, The Case for Reincarnation by Joe Fisher. He started regressing patients. He was a hypnotist. He started regressing people to their childhood to relieve traumas and heal traumas. And he regressed someone too far once. He kept saying, okay, where are you now? Keep going back. Where are you now? Where are you now? And suddenly this person was in darkness. They were standing in void. They were between lives. They were waiting for a body to become available for them to be incarnated into. And then he went back further than that, and then they were in a previous life and all of this sort of stuff. But it reinforces the concept of the void, you know. So, you know, I think, you know, we don't know, and we have to pay attention to this experience is what I'm saying. I think, yeah, there is a balance. There absolutely is a balance in the whole thing, because even if you are in the void and you're sitting there thinking for thousands of years, well, you want to be thinking about good stuff. If you've done all this bad stuff, you're not going to be having a good time sitting there, you know, thinking, wow, I really, really messed up all that stuff I did. Oh, my God, you know, why didn't I do that differently? You might be sitting there having a lot of regrets, so that's not going to be much of an experience. But if you've been able to leave a legacy behind and do good in your life, I think it's going to be better. And I think, you know, the concept of doing good and respecting yourself and respecting others, I think this is a huge part of any spiritual growth, you know. So, yeah.
Hmm. The more you speak about the void, the more I'm wondering if it's some type of filter that we pass through, exactly like you said, waiting for another body. And the point is to avoid the void and move beyond it, because I sure as heck don't want to come back to this planet after I leave. This is my last ride. I've already decided I'm going to do whatever I can here to build my karma up to a point to where I can escape this prison and go to another prison planet, which I'm sure exists somewhere.
What if one of the major things that does it is fear? You know, if you are in a state of fear, you know, you will create that. If you're in fear of coming back here, you'll be back because you'll create it, because you'll be fixating on it, you'll be thinking about it. But if this is a realm of infinite possibility and life is based on imagination, you may imagine a far, far better reality to experience than this one. This one may not have left such a lasting impression on you because you knew it was fiction. You knew it was a product of imagination. You didn't go into this place and fixate on that reality and how terrible it must have become. And, oh, my God, now I'm going to be born back into it, because you will, because you will create it through your own imagination. See, if you can remove fear. See, I'm not in fear of this system at all. I see this system as an enormous challenge for human consciousness and an enormous opportunity for me to create something far, far better than where this is going. And I have no fear of this system. I have no fear of the reality that is being created around me by the psychopaths that are running this world. I see it as a huge opportunity for me to do something about it. And I intend to do something about it. And I intend to leave a legacy behind so that even if I did come back to this continuous, this time continuum, it'll be a vastly different place if I do, you know. But I'll imagine something better.
You know why babies cry when they're born? Because they realize they have to come back. And we will be right back with Max Egan right on the other side, right here on Truth Frequency.
Exposing the hate and exploring the love. This is the Truth Frequency Radio Network.
You know, I probably shouldn't harass my twin flame during the show, but it's so funny. She had her feet up on my desk, so I gave her a little tickle. And the look she made.
He doesn't understand, though, how much it hurts.
It was the most annoyed look that I've ever seen in my life.
He doesn't understand how much it hurts to sit up for 3 hours when you just had surgery a few days ago.
I just barely touched it.
I know, but never mind.
Oh, you know I love
you. Let's move on.
All right. So we're back. We're speaking with Max Egan, and we're talking about the void and really getting deep into the ideas of the afterlife. Now, Max, I do want to ask you this. There was an experiment in the 40s that I believe was done by the German Nazis where they actually took a dog, decapitated it, kept the brain oxygenated, but they had ultimately killed the dog. The animal's heart had stopped breathing. They kept all the organs alive with machines, and then they reanimated the head. And the head was able to feel the sensations. It was able to open the eyes and do other things like that. Then they sewed the dog up completely. And once they brought the dog back to life after putting everything back together, a few days later after recovery, the dog was bouncing around. It still knew its name. It was still prone to the same type of, what's the term I'm looking for? It was receptive. It was receptive to the same type of treats. It had the exact same personality than before it had passed away and was brought back to life. And they kept the dog dead for a good 10, 15 minutes. So this was a long time. It wasn't just a couple of minutes and it's back. But that also brings the question of a soul up, because how is it, in your opinion, and of course we can only theorize and philosophize, but how is it that the dog was able to be reanimated with the same soul after it was brought back to life?
No, because it had the same DNA tuned to the same frequency, so that's what it downloaded. Of course, you know. I mean, it's the same biological structure. It's the same biological computer, which is tuned to a certain frequency that it downloads, which that is that dog's consciousness, you know. So, you know, I mean, it might be a different, a completely different thing to a human consciousness. I don't know. I'm not a dog. I can't remember any life as a dog to make the comparison. So I can only speculate. I don't know. It's all speculation. But to me, it makes sense. Of course, it would be the same dog. It would have to be the same dog, you know?
Right.
I mean, as well, if you, like I was saying before, you can think of the body as a biological computer and it's received a certain amount of programs up to that point in life. If you download that frequency back into that computer, then all those programs are still going to be installed within that biology, aren't they?
That is true.
Mm. That it's is, all in that the is water. Very true. The water has memory. You understand? The water is the RAM drive of that computer, so it has all the memory. So you could pluck your consciousness out of your body. You could be dead for an hour, go into a coma for a year, and come back and remember everything about being Chris Geo up to that point. Because it's all in the water. It's all the RAM drive in your water. It's all the caches still there, you know. Yeah, so to me it makes sense. If you can think about the body as being a biological computer, that's what it is. Now, all the water has the memory, and this has been proven, the water has memory. It all makes sense that would happen.
So on that note, that begs the question, and again, we're just theorizing, but how much information can we actually take with us once we leave the body if the body is hard-programmed with the information?
What do you mean? I don't quite follow that question.
Well, how much if our DNA contains the memory and our brain contains the memory and the soul leaves the body, then it leaves the DNA and the brain behind. So how much information can we take with us by just spiritual means?
It's all as frequency as well. I mean, it's all encoded as frequency as well as electrical energy. You know, you have a thought that leaves your head as an energetic frequency. It creates a frequency in the field. It's there. All information exists in the field. You know, all the physical information is encoded in the water, so that recharges the RAM drive of the physicality, right? But then you've got the etheric charging, the electrical charging as well, because it's all energy. Everything you feel is an electromagnetic impulse. It's the interaction between the electromagnetic impulse and the physical body that creates the whole thing. And the water is really the conductor. That's what carries it all around, really. You know, the water would be the conductor of the electricity in your body, which would make your body function very efficiently as an electrical thing. You know, water is very, very conductive, you know. So the information is encoded in the water. It's also in the energy. So you're a frequency. Everything that you, this is unlimited. I mean, you can put as much information in there as you are, you know, your memory is capable of holding. You know, you'll find now that there's stuff that you don't remember from when you were a kid, though. So it's kind of does get limiting. You know, we remember what we want to remember. Perhaps that's why we sit in void for so long, gives us a chance to remember the whole thing and make sense of what that experience was all about, right from the word go to the end. Maybe it takes us a certain amount of time. Maybe that's how long we're in the void. The amount of time it takes us to remember and put the whole experience in together into something coherent so that we have the information we need to have the next experience. I don't know.
Wow.
All we can do is speculate, you know.
Right. That also makes sense when you think about people who say their life flashed before their eyes at the time of death.
Well, yeah, of course it would. I mean, all of that information is there. It's all there energetically as well as being in the water, in the memory. And that's got to go back to the whole physical RAM drive of the planet in order for the planet, for this physicality to understand the experience and to put that information in there, for even for you to be able to remember it when you come back. Because when we come back here and we have these often some of the most enlightening moments we have in life are more like memories than anything else. It's when we just suddenly know something. It's because we've remembered it. Because we've been able to access that RAM. We've been able to access that information that's already here in the field. It's floating all around us energetically. And it's all encoded in the water of the planet. And the water connects everything together. I mean, even rocks have got traces of water in them. So water is in everything, you know, except perhaps what we've made. Some of our prefab stuff might possibly not contain water, but that's a whole new experience. In another way, they're probably trying to destroy the RAM drive. But anyway, I mean, I think that's a lot of why they're trying to pollute the groundwater as well. They really seem to be going out of their way to contaminate the water on this planet. It seems to be like an almost major, one of their major efforts, one of the major goals of this system seems to be to contaminate the water on this planet. I think there's a reason for that, because it contains all the memory of creation in the water. It contains the physical RAM of the whole human experience and all life experience on the planet. You know, the water remembers the whole lot. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting talking about this sort of stuff, but, I mean, all we can do is speculate. But really, when you look at, you know, people talking about the void and what it's actually like, and you think about, you know, the energetic nature of memory and the physical nature of memory in regard to water, a lot of it makes sense that this is probably how it happens. But again, if you're not in a state of fear when you go into that space, then you could conceivably come back to any reality you want to create. And it seems conceivable that it wouldn't necessarily be this Earth that runs in a linear fashion. It could be this Earth. If this Earth makes that much of an impression on you and puts you in that much of a state of fear to return here, then very likely you will return here, which would be why this Earth goes to so much trouble, why these people who run the place go to so much trouble to create and instill this state of fear in people, because they want all of these frequencies to come back to this reality so they can continue to control them. But if you can imagine a different world altogether, when you die, you go to a planet that's a complete utopia, it also makes sense that all of these same frequencies that are all here could also be downloaded into that physicality, because you could imagine them being there. These computers could be created. That frequency could be downloaded into a different reality as well while it's experiencing this reality. Why not? If you can clone a person and have two clones alive, they're the same frequency at the same time in the same reality. Why can't they exist in parallel realities? It's only a frequency, after all. If you download a frequency from the field, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist in the field anymore. It's still there. It could be downloaded into any computer anywhere throughout any quantum reality that is tuned to that frequency. So your next reality could be something completely different to this one, depending on how much fear this one leaves you in. And I would suggest that that's why all of this fear is created, because you've got these psychopaths in control. They know how reality works. They know that they can just puppeteer and imagine whatever they want and create whatever they want, and they need all you guys here, so they got people to puppet around and have fun with their slaves. They like to have fun with their little human farm that they run. You know, so they put you in a state of fear so you'll come back here. So I think a lot of it is about the removal of fear. It really, really is. That's such a huge part of it. And that's why I don't have any fear of this system at all, because it can't hurt me, because I'm just a frequency.
Very well said. That brings a lot more thoughts to mind, and a lot of interesting thoughts in the chat room as well. Before I get to the comments in the chat room, let me say this. We are fans of a show called Dexter, which is about a good guy serial killer, for lack of a better term. He only kills bad people. But at the very end, he was escaping with his twin flame, and he decided at the last minute that he needed to fake his death and move out to Oregon. And I guess it was the killer versus the human mentality that was inside of him, the two fighting amongst each other, and he chose the killer. And so I started doing a little bit of research, and I was wondering, why did they pick Oregon for him to move to? As it turns out, Oregon is one of the serial killer capitals of the world. For some reason, Oregon just seems to breed all of these serial killers. So on that note, do you think it's possible that the energetic memory of the planet Earth can also affect people in a way to where you have these hotspots like in Oregon, where all of this evil is bred because of the energetic field that's there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the energetic field, and also the water in the area, it contains that memory, contains that RAM. And if people are, you know, psychopathic frequencies, and they really enjoyed that little time that they had there, they might want to come back and do it again. Now, Oregon, that's left hand of God, isn't it? Is that Oregon?
I'm not sure.
Well, is it shaped like a left hand?
Yes, that's the one.
Okay, that's I mean, look at, yeah, you've got some spectacular serial killers from Oregon. Ed Gein was one that comes to mind. Edward Gein, he was the man they based the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies on.
Oh, yeah, that was a horrific story behind him.
He didn't, I mean, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I mean, that wasn't a real story, but it was actually based on the life of Ed Gein.
Right.
And he was a particularly crazed individual who came from Oregon. So yeah, it is interesting. Could but I think, yeah, if it's in the memory, if it's in the water, then yeah, people are going to be prone to that. And, yeah, people may just enjoy their lives and want to come back and do it again. I mean, let's face it, there's some pretty psychopathic frequencies out there.
Yes, definitely. Let me go to a couple of the comments out of the chat room. Somebody asked the question, we were talking about how we can't remember a lot of our lives, and that's very true in my case. I don't remember much of my teen years. I remember scenes from my childhood, but not very much of it. But the person in the chat room was asking the opposite. What about things that we remember that we want to forget? Now, I can chime in on that. I have a mental technique that I use for that, and that is where I will take the scene or memory and picture an eraser, erasing it and turning it white and then replacing it with something else. And I've been able to forget about a lot of things that have happened in my life, unfortunate things, things that I've seen that I would rather not see. And that's been one of the techniques that I've used. So hopefully that can help the listener that asked that. But Max, what is your take on that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I haven't been able to forget any memories. There was stuff that I never remembered because it was too painful to remember until I was old enough to have the strength to remember it. My body knew, my mind knew that I wasn't ready for that information. And when I did get the information, it was devastating. But I'm grateful for the information. I don't want to forget anything. I want to remember everything because I think it's what I do with that information. I think all of this comes to you for a reason, to give you a certain perspective, to perhaps help you empathize with others who've gone through similar things. I mean, some of the stuff that I talk about on the radio show, when I talk about the emotional things and I talk about the state of some people, a lot of it is from personal experience. I've had a very, very rough life in many ways. I mean, not so bad. I mean, people have had worse lives than I have, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I didn't get, hung on a clothesline and whipped or anything. I mean, there's people that have had bad lives. But I've also had, a lot of very, very traumatic experiences in my childhood, and I'm grateful to all of them, for all of them, because all of them made me who I am now and gave me the perspective that I have now. So personally, I don't think it's about forgetting anything. I think it's about understanding why that happened and understanding what you can now do with that information. Because ultimately, it doesn't matter. You're still here, and you've got that perspective now for a reason. What is that reason? What do you do with that? What's it for? Because there's a reason for it all. As painful as it may be, there's a reason for it all. And I'm grateful for everything that happened in my life. I'm grateful for all of the bad stuff as much as I'm grateful for all of the good stuff, because all of it made me who I am now. And I believe that I'm finally on my path in life. I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. And so, yeah, I couldn't be doing it if none of that stuff happened. I wouldn't be who I am, I'd be something different. So, yeah, it's about what you do with it, I think.
I'm right there with you, definitely. Any thoughts on people who dream through, I guess, I'm trying to phrase this in a different way than what the chatter put, because I think I can elaborate a little bit more on it. But dreams that you see through other people's eyes, maybe dreams that belong to other people or experiences other people have that the dreamer is actually experiencing him or herself. I've never experienced any of these kind of dreams, but I thought that it was pretty fascinating the way the chatter relayed this. Any thoughts on that?
What you mean when you're dreaming that you're somebody else?
Yes, yes.
Like somebody that you know or just somebody other than you?
Oh, I'm not sure. I have to...
Yeah, it'd be hard to dream that you're somebody that you know. That'd be weird.
Yes.
But yeah. I've had dreams where I'm not me, or I'm not in this body. I'm not in this life. I'm not in this reality. I've had dreams like that. But I've always been me. I've always been the same consciousness, the same frequency. But I've been in different realities. I used to have a reoccurring dream when I was a child of being in a... I was a Viking or a Norseman or something. I was living in a small place by the coast. It was half of it was underground. There was a bed at one end of the room in a little alcove with a window opening over it, looking out over the ocean. It was sort of up on top of a cliff. And there was lots of furs around, and furs on the seats and fur on the bed, like It was like fur boots, and you know, it was like I was a Viking or something like that back in those days. And the doors burst open, about four or five guys walk in, and there's a huge fight. And I end up slashed across the face with a sword, and half of my face is sort of hanging down. And I turn to my wife, and she screams, and I say, it's bad, isn't it? And that's all I remember. I think I die at that point. But I had that dream quite often when I was a kid, like many, many times. So I believe that I was remembering a death that I may have had in a previous life. I don't know. But I was still me. I was still this frequency. I was just in a different body, in a different place, in a different country, speaking a different language.
You know what's funny is recently I began having dreams like that, and I believe that they are past life experiences. I have been dreaming. I've had a couple of dreams consecutively that I was in the Korean War fighting on the American side for some reason. I don't know. I've never been a soldier or any of that. I have no desire to be, but I was this completely different person that was a POW. So I don't know. Maybe that's an insight into some past lives. I've also had dreams.
You still feel like you?
I still felt like me. That's what. Yeah, I could look down. Yes. I could see my hands.
Still that frequency, you know.
Yeah.
So what? Even if you are someone else in your dream, you're still ultimately you, aren't you?
Right. Yes. Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely fascinating discussion that we're having so far with Max Egan. And any idea, is there a deadline or anything for the film? Not a deadline, but let's say a projection date. Is there a date that you guys have in mind for releasing it?
Look, I'm hopefully going to have it back here and edited and released by mid-January or February next year. I want to get it out really early next year because I want to launch the Full Circle Project, and I want that to be a major part of 2014. But again, it depends on what's going on with this TV show with Dave Icke, because I'd like to get that done as well. I really think there is a lot of potential for what he wants to do, for all the criticism and stuff that he's getting for it from a lot of people. I'm even getting criticism from people for wanting to go over to that network. But I just think, you know, we've got to get information out to as wide an audience as possible, and I should go where the audience is, you know. I can still continue to do what I do. But if I can do this as well, perhaps run the show on both networks or something. So it just depends on that. I mean, I've really got a lot on my plate at the moment, and it's all a one-man show. I mean, everything on the Crow House is a one-man show. All the radio shows, the videos, everything I do, it's all a one-man show. So for me to produce a television show by myself, anything of any quality to just get started is a big ask at the moment. It's a tall order, especially with this trip to Peru already booked and already ongoing. So yeah, I mean, I've got a lot on my plate. The plan is to have it out by February, but with the whole TV thing, I mean, I'll just have to see what happens. There's a chance I might end up in England. After Peru, I might end up having to go and stay in England for 3 months or something and try to put it together over there. I don't really know. So I'm just sort of following the path and following the synchronicity at the moment and see what happens.
February, I would imagine you would have said something like, sometime in 2015, 2016, because usually that's how long post-production and everything like that takes. But when you're on that path and you're just in the truth frequency, then all of a sudden everything just starts coming out, just boom, 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 boom. So that would be awesome to see a February release date for sure. And we actually had you on the show one time when we were doing Truth Frequency TV, and I don't know if you had a chance to look at the production quality, but it was, in my opinion anyways, pretty interesting. We had the camera changer, and everything was done live, and we were flipping back and forth, but it was a lot of work, and it took away a lot of focus from the show because I was having to focus on the camera changer and the mixer and three monitors and everything that was going on at the time. And then rendering everything and getting it up on the internet after the fact was taking all day, literally. So we stopped doing that. But I know how hard it is to put something like that together. And so I commend you for the drive to do so.
Well, yeah. I mean, it'd be better if I can go and do it in England. And they've got the whole studio there. They've got a whole studio that they're setting up. So I'd simply be able to walk in there as an announcer and perhaps have bits of footage I've pre-prepared and go in there and just... they can edit all the show and put it all together for me. And that would be great to be able to do it that way. And then I can continue. If I can do that, I mean, if I can go to England and they can just do the show from there, then I can concentrate on getting the film out. But if I've got to come back here and I'm producing a show for England, well, it's just not going to be realistic. I mean, if I end up coming straight back here from Peru, then I'll just spend my time until February working on the film. That'll be around the clock. And then I'll go to England and do the TV show, start early next year on the TV show over there. And perhaps do it that way. I don't know, that might be more realistic. I mean, it's just not realistic for me to be doing both, because I just don't have the strength and energy, and I really do want to get this film out. So, I mean, I don't really know. I'm just playing it by ear at the moment, but I hope to have it out as early as possible, and I really do hope to get this this show on his network as well, because I want to reach that audience. I think we've got to make a difference, Chris. We've really got to take every avenue we possibly can to undermine this system and make a difference. I'd like to see, like I said, political parties, media campaigns, you know, television stations like this, radio campaigns, advertising campaigns, workshops, street expositions, and, you know, tents, stalls, market stalls, everything you can think of, anything that people can think of, skywriting, you know, anything. Just make a noise, rock the boat, now's the time.
Beautifully said. And let me share something interesting with you. I was driving around with my dog today, and I had him in the car for about 3 hours. I didn't have any water to give him. I usually carry a bottle of water, and he's got a little portable bowl that it's made out of this cloth material, which is actually pretty neat because it folds up, and I can take him anywhere I want with me. Anyway, so I stop, and I get him a glass of water, and they didn't have any bottled water. All they had was tap water, and they gave me a glass, and I tried to give it to him. And even though he was in the car for 3.5 hours with me, he did not want to drink the tap water. But as soon as I gave him the purified water, he drank it right up as if he was starving or thirsting, starving, the equivalent of, he parched. That's what I'm looking for, as if he was parched for water. Isn't that interesting that the animals don't even want to drink this crap?
Yeah, well, animals, they got higher senses, man. They don't drink poison.
Yeah.
So you get a lollipop with aspartame in it, you drop it on the ground, the ants won't go near it, they'll walk around it.
Right.
Back in the old days, you drop a lolly on the ground, you know, sweet on the ground, the ants would be all over it in 10 seconds, you know. Now you drop it on the ground, they walk around it, they want to know about it. They know not to eat poison, and the dog knows not to drink poison.
It tastes like poison as well, not just the water, but the aspartame. I went through a period in time when I drank nothing but Diet Coke, and this was way back before I knew any better, but you don't realize when you're drinking it what it's doing to your brain, but once you stop drinking it and you see the difference, then you realize, oh my God, this has really affected me. Because I had heard about aspartame, and this was when I first started to wake up, and I was drinking it anyways and saying, ah, it's not affecting me, that must be for other people. But then when I stopped, I noticed that the brain fart stopped, that I was able to think clearer, speak a lot clearer, and I had a lot of anxiety back then, and the anxiety dissipated as well with it. So it really goes to show that those chemicals really do affect you. You just have to open your eyes to it. Anything you want to leave the audience with?
Oh, look, wake up, please. It's all up to you. It's up to everybody. There are no leaders, folks. You've got to lead yourself. And I think now is the time that we've got to start acting, and we've got to work to politely undermine this system in every possible way that we can. So let's get on board.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, Max Egan, all the way from the Crow House, we thank you so much for your time this evening, brother, and wish you best on your journey, safe travels, and everybody kiss the one you love right now. You never know the last time is going to be. We'll see you every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. Stay tuned for Exposing Faux Capitalism up next, Live Free FM right after that, 32 Degrees of Insanity with Donnie Gilson, and of course, we have a great weekend lineup, David Whitehead, Truth Warrior, Staunching Tyranny, with Jim and Jeff, Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye, Freedom Link with Joe Joseph, Change the Channel, The Christopher Everard Show, much, much more. Go to truthfrequencyradio.com/schedule for the full lineup of hosts right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. We thank each and every one of you, and we'll see you next weekend.